And good morning to everyone. I should note that Justice Wright will not be participating on any of today's cases. With that in mind, the first case of the day is State v. Ronald Longson. Mr. Jorgensen, good morning to you.
May it please the Court, my name is John Jorgensen. I'm from Lancaster County Public Defender's Office. I'm here today representing Mr. Ronald Longson on a direct appeal from the imposition of a custodial sanction. As indicated, the matter presented to the Court in this case involves the imposition of custodial sanctions for an individual who was placed on probation. One thing to be mindful in examining that particular history is that Mr. Longson was placed on probation for a conviction that occurred prior to what we would have in Nebraska of the 605, the change of the modification of some of the provisions governing the probation administration, and among other things here. But Mr. Longson's offense date prior to the effective date of 605, I guess, was the thing I wanted to make sure to make clear. Then he sent.
What was the effective date of 605, in your opinion?
Well, it certainly would have been before January of 2015, which is when his offense date was. Now, he's ultimately convicted and sentenced, I think, in October, maybe November of that year, which would have been well past that effective date, which I believe would have been sometime in July. I think there were some varying points in 605 as to this provision's effective on this particular date. This particular provision has an emergency clause, so it's immediately effective, and others had other designated effective dates, so I don't immediately
recall. And how is this court to know those things? Effective dates and so forth. Is there something in the record? Do we have these rules in the record, and should they be in the record?
Well, what I can tell the court is that I think in page one of the transcript there would be an indication as to when Mr. Longson was originally convicted, when he was sentenced, and what his offense date was, when he was transferred here. So those particular dates would be contained in the transcript itself. In regards to effective dates and so forth, I don't know that either party referenced this date became, this is when this provision became effective or not or otherwise. Maybe that would have been.
In order to get to where you would like us to go, do we need to have those dates?
Well, not necessarily. I think that the court can make a determination, first of all, that maybe these sorts of matters would have been fleshed out had there been a prosecutor in the courtroom. And remand the matter right there, reverse the decision of the court, remand the matter back to the district court for further proceedings so that there can be an adversarial process that would help flush out those particular processes. But we didn't have that in this particular case. The state, as the court is aware, withdrew from the case. And so I'm left in this awkward position of not having someone else on the adversarial side of things with a prosecutor that withdraws it. Well, it turns out that there was a prosecutor in the courtroom when he was up on the bench, and that was the individual that offered, received evidence, then convicted, made a determination, adjudicated, determined that there had been a necessary offense, and then thereafter made a determination to impose a restriction on this individual's liberty.
Do the court rules require the judge to accept certain evidence at a hearing of that sort?
Well, and that's where the confusion came in, I think, in this particular case, because the district court, as you see from the record, made it clear that that was their reading of that particular line in the statute that says that the court shall receive. And as we all know, that shall becomes mandatory and makes a directive for the court to do this particular thing. However, you can't just read that one particular sentence in isolation. You have to read the entirety of the provision, and that provides when there is a prosecutor present participating in the proceedings, then the second sentence, the court shall receive. And so that necessarily presupposes that there's going to be an individual party there that makes an offering. And it's been a long-standing, for 100 years, a long-standing rule of this court that you can't receive a particular piece of evidence unless it's been offered. And I believe I cited back to that in my particular brief. So the facts of this particular case, the procedural posture of how it was created was I think one of the most bizarre and unusual situations that I've experienced when there's a prosecutor that withdraws and then I'm left to advocate and try to flush out issues the best I can for the court to make a fair and appropriate determination.
What remedy or what outcome are you seeking before us?
I am seeking that the court, I would ask that the court reverse the determination of the district court that made a determination that they had the ability and should proceed in this particular matter. So reverse that decision, remand it back down, and direct that the matter be dismissed, because during the pendency of this appeal at this point, Mr. Lawson's term of probation has now lapsed. And so it would be, I think...
Has now lapsed or is over?
It is now over. I mean, the term of it that he has been on it, and it has not been stayed during the pendency of this appeal. And so it all...
So is this moot?
Well, I don't think it is necessarily, because you have the whole entire issues of whether or not it's capable of being reviewed or escaping review if we're left with a determination that, well, these kinds of matters, when there are custodial sanctions being imposed, they go up on appeal, and by the time they go up on appeal, the term of probation is over. That kind of thing is capable of evading review, so that I think the court should make a determination on the merits of this particular case, because there are a number of other cases that could benefit from a determination as to whether or not the court could do so without opposing counsel,
Are you using public interest speak, moot but public interest?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's what I was trying to
do. Okay. Your pardon.
Yes. I'm sorry.
We're taking a long way around the barn to get to public interest exception is your argument.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
Now, if this were not an interstate case, I'll talk about that for a moment, and a custodial, we're talking about someone who's on probation for a state offense in the court where he or she was sentenced, and the prosecutor doesn't show up, does that mean that the custodial sanction cannot go forward under our procedural regime?
I would say yes, because there is no one there to offer any evidence of any determination that there's been any sort of wrongdoing or malfeasance or other failure to abide by the terms and conditions or expectations of whatever probation order. Unless the individual wanted to offer evidence themselves that they had somehow violated. But no, I don't believe that that would ever occur necessarily. So no, I don't think that the matter could proceed. If there's not a prosecutor there to initiate the proceedings, not someone there to make sure that there's been a demonstration of proof by preponderance, which we all know is a very low standard, but at least someone there to demonstrate something to that particular court, someone from the executive to provide information to the judiciary to make that necessary adjudication for that imposition of whatever sanction.
Do you think the statute, as amended by LB 605 and the subsequent act, contemplates that prosecutors, by inaction, can defeat the administrative sort of custodial, the administrative sanctions that were contemplated in 605 within the judicial branch through probation?
Absolutely. Just like they can frustrate, if you want to use that term, current probation violations.
Well, that goes back to then resentencing, which is a different... isn't that a different regime?
Well, it's a different statutory procedure and process, yes, and different procedure, but it's the same sort of notion that if there is cause for someone who's on probation to have given cause for some concern that there's been a violation, a prosecutor can look at that and make a determination to not file revocation.
Before your time expires, this is an interstate case. We have a statute that enters Nebraska into the interstate compact on adult, whatever it is, supervision.
Yes.
And that statute, which directed the governor to sign and enter into the compact, says that the rules of the commission created by the compact have the effect of statutory law. So far, so good?
Yes.
Are we permitted to go look for those?
Are you permitted to go look for those rules? And
for those rules.
Yes, because I do think they are governing, and I think that both of the parties cited back to the applicable provisions of the court in the live one to make a determination as to the appropriateness of it. Even if you assume that it was appropriate to proceed without someone from the prosecutor's office in terms of the merits of the proceedings or any, I think we cited back to the rules both parties did that.
That come from a website somewhere.
Well, they are published on a website, yes. Yes.
So, do we take judicial notice of that? How do we can,
well,
that's we can go look for them? What do we do with them?
That's a very good question. I hadn't contemplated that necessarily. I don't necessarily know what the court would do with that. I see my time has lapsed.
What would be the source, because there wasn't a set of rules printed and made an exhibit, right, in old school discussion, right?
That would be ideal, yes. I understand, like, if there was a city ordinance case, you would typically make sure that city ordinance is made part of the record and have it brought up and so that the court can utilize and look at that particular city ordinance and compare it with any state statute so you have it in the particular record. Here we don't have a prosecutor that didn't present a record in that.
Was it your job to present the record? Isn't this your argument?
My argument is that this matter should not have been permitted to proceed. There was no one there to prosecute the matter. There was no one there to make a demonstration of a preponderance of evidence of a violation. There was no one there make a determination that there was any sort of violation at all. So on that basis,
if the request is that we go see the rules, maybe this is only rhetorical. What do we do if there's rot? You know, website rot. It's just not there at some point.
Again, that's a very good question. I don't know what the court would be required to do on that. I don't know. I suppose the only way you can handle that is for a remand matter back down with directions that any particular prosecutor, should they decide to actually prosecute the case, present an adequate record for the court to review, including any rules that might be applicable.
But your client's been discharged from probation, is that correct?
That is correct.
Well, you used the term lapsed.
Well,
what did you mean, to be clear? Has he been released? Has he completed his term of probation and been released?
Well, again, I know my time's over, so I may continue to answer.
You may continue.
Thank you. The term of his probation that he was set to be on has ended at this point. And so there is no reason, no order requiring him to abide by any further terms and conditions of supervision or analysis testing or anything else that might have been involved in that particular. Whether you use a shorthand term lapse or terminated, it's...
Has the standard order of discharge from probation been entered?
I do not believe that there has. I have not received, I do not believe, and I don't think there's anything in this record here immediately that the court or the state of Montana has otherwise issued some sort of order discharge, recognizing that term has lapsed.
One last twist on the, hypothetically, because we haven't looked at them yet, but assuming we did, and assuming we found out that there was a rule 4-101 of the commission that expressly approved custodial sanctions, and that the supervising state, the receiving state, was entitled to rely upon that rule, but there had been an amendment to the rule as of June 1, 2017, and we don't know what the rule was before as opposed to what it is now. How would we reach the issues that you all are wanting us to opine on, unless we were to simply say, absent prosecutor? That's your answer, absent prosecutor. But if we don't buy on with that, how do we deal with the rest of this?
Well, I don't know that you can, so you should go with my answer.
Yeah.
So I don't know the answer as to how the court would make an accurate determination as to the rules of the interstate compact at the time of the offense, at the time of conviction of sentencing, at the time of transfer, at the time of the offense. I don't court would do that. I don't know which one the court would mean to be the most relevant and important for resolving whatever particular issues. I think the easy answer is a service matter.
Well, the even easier answer would be to say moot, go away, and come back later.
Well, but in this particular case, though, we have clear indications that, you know, if we have one particular indication of case where it's reached the point of being presented to the court and has the term has already elapsed, I think we have every reason to believe anyone else so similarly situated is going to be in the same situation. So
similarly situated as an interstate compact or just the run-of-the-mill local person?
Either. Being unable to present back to this court any issues for the court's resolution before the term of their probation, supervision, maybe.
Okay. Thank you.
Would ask that the court reverse the matter, demand it, and have the matter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lewis, good morning to you.
Good morning. This court is just in general. Quite a few questions here. If you're interested in what you have to ask me, then what I have to say, but I just have, I guess, a few comments on each claim raised. I'll briefly run through. Feel free to interrupt me here at any point. We maintain that both of the assigned errors appear to be without merit. As far as the first issue, whether the district court had authority to impose custodial sanctions, maintain that it did based on the interstate compact, assuming we consider it. Our state statutes governing the administration of probation and this court's rules governing the administration of probation set forth in our brief. The interstate compact itself provides that a receiving state can place an out-of-state probationer in custody if deemed appropriate. And then both our state statutes and this court's rules provide that probationers are subject to custodial sanctions in Nebraska. And the statutes and rules itself provide that the presiding judge in the jurisdiction in which probation is under supervision shall serve as the authorizing court for administrative and custodial sanctions. So, based on a plain reading of these rules and statutes, in our view, the district court...
So where did you find the rules? Where are we supposed to find the rules?
I found them online. As far as whether they're before you, I'm not entirely sure. I guess I don't see why you couldn't take judicial notice of them, especially when by statute we have adopted and implemented them, and our legislature has provided that to the extent we have any laws conflicting with that compact, the compact supersedes those laws, so I guess it seems to me that judicial notice is acceptable here.
How do we deal with my hypothetical question about if we do look at the website and we do find what the current rule is, but it says in the comments that it was amended June 1st, 2017, how do we know what the rule was before that? Because the rule that would apply would be when this hearing occurred, wouldn't it?
I believe that it would. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how, without some sort of request, I would even get a copy of those words prior to that change. So I'm frankly, Justice Castle, I'm not sure how to answer your question. What's there is all we have, or at least that's all that I've seen. So.
Your opponent has suggested that the time of the probation has expired, but isn't clear about whether there's been a discharge, a release, or whatever documentation would customarily and normally follow in these circumstances. Can you add to what he said?
Well, my impression, at least in briefing it, was that this wasn't necessarily moot, because I think the record reflects that he requested and received a bail bond, and it was 2 days of jail time that had not yet been served. I was listening, or I'm not sure if that was clarified, whether or not he had actually served that or not, but if that's still hanging out there, then I guess I would think this was not moot. That's why I made that comment in the facts of my brief. So, in addition to that, I guess the only other thing I would say is, you know, I know the context of post-conviction, somebody has to be in custody or else the proceedings moot on appeal. But is that the same on direct appeal? I know there's some case law, I think, from this court and the Supreme, so the U.S. Supreme, saying that if the only thing you're challenging is your sentence and that's completed, the proceedings probably moot. But there is a different dynamic when you're talking direct appeal versus post-conviction proceedings. in my mind, I'm not sure that it's completely clear to the point that I would call this moot. Plus, especially if that jail time is still out there.
I appreciate your answer. I have to confess that when you talked about the Supremes, I'm old enough that my mind went back to Diana Ross.
Just briefly on the second issue raised here, whether the district court had the authority to proceed without the executive branch present or a representative of the executive branch present. We submit that appears that was okay because the legislature has specifically and expressly delegated authority to do this to the judicial branch, set forth our state statutes, as well as our case law establishes that during a term of probation, the court can eliminate, modify, or add terms to a term of probation on application of the probationer, the probation officer, or the court itself on its own motion.
Mr. Jorgensen suggests that a prosecutor needs to be there to do that, for the court to do that.
I don't think that's the case, Your Honor. I mean, the statute itself is specifically authorizing even a court to do this on its own motion. We aren't dealing with a constitutional separation of powers type argument that was never raised below or on appeal here. All we're talking about was, did the court have authority to do this? As I'm reading that statute, it pretty clearly says it does upon application. It clearly does upon application of the probationer and probation officer work.
Does the record tell us why the Attorney General's office was not present?
No, it does not, Your Honor. And frankly, I'm obviously from the Attorney General's office, and I have no idea why what communications were had or why, assuming they did happen, why we chose not to be present there. I know that the prosecutor's rationale for not participating was that he didn't think he had authority, and even if he did, they weren't necessarily interested in pursuing this matter.
What's the significance? The probation officer appeared, is that right?
Yes.
Is there some legal significance to that? Appeared as a witness? What role was the probation officer playing?
Well, I guess it sort of seems like the probation officer was kind of in a dual capacity of...
Which branch?
I don't think there's any dispute that the probation officer was there on behalf of the judicial branch. But then I think the dual capacity or the other capacity sort of... I don't know if I would go as far as to say that.
It was the probation officer who had requested the custodial sanction.
Yes.
And who brought the documentation to support the custodial sanction.
Correct.
A witness.
What's that?
A witness?
Yeah, I guess my hesitation there is when I think of a witness, I think of a party bringing a witness to an adversarial proceeding, and so that's my hesitation with calling probation officer a witness.
Right.
But yes, I mean, the probation officer certainly showed up and introduced those things, and the district court received those things into evidence. I mean, that happened.
Well, it's clear that we're struggling with what sort of procedure is required in this kind of a custodial sanction hearing. We keep defaulting out to the traditional adversarial system. Is that what the statute contemplated for a custodial sanction hearing?
No, I don't think that it does, especially when it says that the county...
So what are our guardrails? What are our parameters?
I think at least from a statutory and rule standpoint, just what the rules provide. I mean, you got to give them notice. You got to give them a hearing. They have a right to counsel if they request counsel. There are certain rights that don't attach. You don't get the full panoply of rights as you would in a revocation or in a trial. To me, it's much like similar to a revocation proceeding. You have some due process concerns and some statutory framework.
But there, the prosecutor comes because it's the prosecutor's motion to revoke probation.
Correct.
Is the prosecutor required to be present, make an appearance? In a custodial sanction hearing?
I don't believe so. The statute says they may appear.
Do the rules require it? The court rules?
I was just looking at those earlier. I don't recall. I don't think that they... I could be mistaken. I did not think that they did, Your Honor. You know, the statute says may appear. I think the rules are consistent with that. I apologize if I'm incorrect on that. But again, just purely from a... rule and statutory standpoint here, it appears the district court had authority to do what it did in terms of imposing these and proceeding without the executive branch, in my assessment. If there are no further questions, assuming you agree, we ask you to approve the judgment of the district court. If not, we would request clarification on how this should be done.
Thank you. If we affirm the judgment, would Mr. Longshin have to serve the 2 days after his probation is over?
I would assume so.
Is he even in Nebraska?
I don't know, Your Honor. My impression would be that even if his term of probation is in fact completed, that he's still on the hook for those 2 days. I mean, he has an appeal bond, but that doesn't mean he's off the hook. Because sir, that didn't happen. He'll happen to take long enough for his service. So where he's at, I don't know. I mean, a commitment order was issued, so to me, that's certainly finding it still in effect. Assuming that he's no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the second case of the day.